We're holding on Kuf Lamed Zayin Amud Beis, four lines from the bottom. We've been talking about the various dinim involving matanos, so now continuing on a different type of thing within that topic. Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel rather, Hakosiv Nechosiv La'echad. If a person writes La'acher, if a person writes out his Nechosim that he's giving them to somebody else. We're talking about a matnas bari, we can be talking about a matnas shchivmera, whatever. The pashtus may not make a difference, but whatever. The Rashbam points out, actually, that if you have the word kol over here, akosif kol nechosiv la'acher, then it would have to be necessarily, we're talking about a matnas shchivmera, because we're going to talk about in the next perek that if a shchivmera gives away only some of his nechosim, then it's irrevocable, as opposed to when a shchivmera gives all of them, then it's revocable. If he recovers, then he gets them all back, because the reason he gave them away was because he figured he's about to die, and therefore if he doesn't, then he gets them all back, because implicitly there was that condition. If he gives out only some of them, then it's fully effective, and he can never take it back, because then obviously he didn't give it away because he's about to die. Why did he leave himself anything? Anyway, so he had kosim nechosim la'achar, so he wrote out a shtar giving his nechosim to somebody else. There is actually a discussion of Rishonim, whether we're talking about a matnas shchiv merah or whether we're also talking about a matnas bari. The receiver, the makabel, said, I don't want them. Now, he might not want them because, for example, the Rashbam points out, there's a pasuk that says, Sona matanos yichya, a person who hates gifts will live. So therefore he wants to be in that category. So he says, I don't want them. Kona, then we say, he's still kona them, ba'afilo oibid v'tseveach, even if he said, it says Rabbi Yehuda Amash in the name of Shmuel, that even if the guy is standing there and screaming and saying, I don't want them, he's still kona them. And that would mean, among other things, that if he himself has a Baal Chayv, to whom he owes money, then that Baal Chayv is going to be able to collect from that. Why Shmuel would hold that way, we'll see soon. Rabbi Yochanan Amar Lo Kona. Rabbi Yochanan says he's not kona. So Rabbi Abba Bar Memel points out they're not actually really arguing, because it depends on two different circumstances. Kan v'tseveach me'ikra, Rabbi Yochanan is talking about where he's crying and where he's protesting in the first place. As soon as he hears that this guy wants to give him, he right away protests and says, I don't want it. You can't be mezaka to a person bal korcha. You can be mezaka to a person when it's not in his when it's not in his presence, but you can't cause him a choiv when it's not in his presence. And here, for him to receive a gift which he doesn't want, for him, as far as he's concerned, would be a choiv. The Ketzoyis actually points out. There's a difference between, we do have the concept that you can give a matana to a person not in his presence on the grounds of Zochen La'odim Shalei B'fana. But the point is, we're explaining over here, why would he not want to receive it? And the point is, once he says that's a chayv for him, then that's it. Ein chavin La'odim Shalei B'fana. Whereas Shmuel is talking about where first he accepted it quietly, and then later on he protested. So now, once he received it already, then that's it. He received it. So now he doesn't have the ability to take it out of his reshus by saying, I don't want it. He would have to explicitly give it to somebody else or be mafker it. Now, in the case of Tzedeach Me'ikra, where he protested to begin with, the Rashbam brings on the basis of a Gemara in Krisus, that what would happen is it would become hefker. The noisim doesn't get it back because he gave it as a matana. The makabel doesn't receive it because he was tzedeach meikra. He protested to begin with, and that means that he didn't get it. Therefore it becomes hefker. It doesn't return to the original giver, and it doesn't stay by the recipient either. That's what the Rashbam says. Tosfos discusses that point in some detail and compares and contrasts our Gemara with the Gemara in Krisus and discusses this point, incidentally, very, very interestingly, in the middle of the Tosfos. The last line, the narrow lines, you have something v'od kosher la Rav Rabbeinu Peter. The Rav Rabbeinu Peter asks a question on it. He's one of the Balei HaTosfos. You find him here and there in Tosfos, but he's worth highlighting because of his somewhat unusual name. So there. I mean, Petr Bapashkus comes from the name Peter, but there is actually an old sefer that claims that Peter, famously one of Yoshka's Talmidim, was actually sent as a double agent by the Chachamim to pretend to try to guide the new religion, and meanwhile he's going to steer them away from Yiddishkeit and steer them away from mitzvahs so that more Jews don't get entrapped in it, and they call him Peter in token that he patered them from mitzvahs. So they given that, then it might be that Jews consider this a valid name to use, since after all, according to that story, he really was working on behalf of the Chachamim, and he was a faithful Yid. Some say he even composed, some say that this Peter, Shimon was his original name, some say he even composed Nishmas, although I think Rashi disagrees with that. In any case, the point is, apparently Jews in the times of the Balei HaTosfos considered Peter, that is to say, a valid Jewish name, and so here we have one of the Balei HaTosfos bearing that name. Anyway, the Gemara ends up explaining if he refuses the gift altogether at the beginning, then it would go back to the original giver. What the Gemara says there in Krisus, that it becomes hefker. So here the Rashbam is saying, if he protested to begin with, it becomes hefker, and if he received it, then if he actually received it and then protested, then for it to go out of his rishus, he would have to explicitly give it to somebody else or explicitly be mafker it. Tosfos is saying no. If he refused it to begin with, then it doesn't become hefker. It returns to the original owner. If he does protest it afterwards, then we're saying that he needs to, then we would say actually that kol hakodim zacha, once he says now after having received it, I don't want it, then we would say that's reason enough. Since he said he received it, then it goes to him. It doesn't return to the original giver, but at that point, since he says I don't want it, it would become hefker. So here we have that Shmuel is saying then that in the case of, so Shmuel and Rabbi Yochanan then are not disagreeing with each other, but they're talking about two different scenarios, whether he gets it at all or whether he gets it and then he has to, according to the Rashbam, he has to now do something to be masker it, or according to Tosfos, he doesn't because he was Seveach afterwards and therefore implicitly it becomes Hefker. So the Gemara continues, Omer of Nachman Yitzchok, Zika lo yaide acher. Now, if the giver was mezaka to him through somebody else, and it was in his presence. So in other words, let's say we are talking about a shivmerah. So he turns to Reuven and says that here's a shtar that says that I want to give the I'm mezaka to you this shtar that Shimon is going to acquire such and such property from me, and Shimon was there and he didn't say anything, or there was a kinyan sudder and he didn't say anything, and then all of a sudden was shosach, so he was quiet, all of a sudden sabach later on when they came to give him the shtar, he protested, bonu l'machlokas Reb Shimon Gamliel v'Rabbanan, then that would be subject, what happens then would be subject to a machlokas of Reb Shimon Gamliel and the Rabbanan. The Tanya, namely the Machlokas is as follows. Now, yesterday we learned a Machlokas of Reb Shimon Gamliel and the Rabbanan, but that was on a whole different matter. Here we're talking about a different issue. The Tanya, a kosev nechosev la'achar, a person writes out a shtar that he's giving his nechosev to somebody else, v'hoyu behen avodim. Now, let's say that the assets that are listed in the shtar included avodim. Now, he's saying, therefore, he's tzeveach, he's protesting, because he doesn't want to have the bother of feeding, doesn't want to have the bother of and the expense of feeding them. The Rashbam points out in a few places in Shas, they have a discussion whether a person who has an Eved Kanani is required to support him financially, or whether he can tell the Eved, listen, you're a semi-Jew because you've accepted on yourself some mitzvahs, you go around and beg for tzedakah, and people will give you tzedakah just like they would give to a regular Yid. So there's a discussion about that in the Gemara in several places. The halacha is he could say that, not necessarily is it going to remain long term like that, of course, because the Eved more likely is going to say, then what am I need to be an Eved to the sky for, I may as well run away, but in any case, Beis Din doesn't have to get involved in that. But even so, the Rashbam points out, you know, a person doesn't necessarily want to do that. So therefore, he'd rather protest and say, I don't want the Eved in the first place. So we have a shtar, or we have whatever it is, that says that he's receiving this Eved. The shtar was written out. It was given to Reuven to give to Shimon. When Shimon receives it, then he protests. So now you have a machlokas of Shimon Gamliel and the Chachamim. So again, a kosev nechosav la'achar, a person writes out a document that is nechosav, I'm going to go to somebody else. V'hoyu behen avodim, and there are and there were avodim among them. V'omra lo efshi behen, and the recipient says, I don't want them. So what happens? Im hoya rabon sheni koyin. Suppose that that second master, namely the recipient of the gift, Shimon, in our scenario, suppose that he's a koyin. Harei la uchlin betruma. Then these slaves would be able to eat truma because he is koyin of them, and we know that the avodim knanim of a koyin are able to eat truma. So in other words, he was koyin, and that's that. What happens after that? He decides he doesn't want these avodim. Fine, he's going to go sell them to somebody else or do whatever. But until then, the Tanakhama says that he's able to eat truma. Reb Shimon Gamliel Omer, but Reb Shimon Gamliel says no. Kivin Shama Allah Yefshi Behen. Once he says I don't want them, Kvaz Zochu Behen Yoshin. Then the heirs of the original giver are going to be zoche in them, which means actually that Rashbam says doesn't strictly speaking mean that Rav Shimon Gamliel is saying the heirs of the first one. It means in other words either the original person who gave it or his yoshif. It depends whether he's alive or dead. The giver wrote out a document saying I'm giving my property to somebody else. So it depends whether so is he alive now or is he dead? Yeah. So one way or the other, either he or his heirs will get it back. The point is that Rashbam says Reb Shimon Gamliel disagrees with the concept that we said before, that if the guy says I don't want it, then it becomes hefker, where again that Rashbam had learned that if he says I don't want it to begin with, then it becomes hefker, and if he says later on I don't want it, then he has to say that he's mafker it. So Reb Shimon Gamliel would disagree with that concept and say that no, it doesn't become hefker. It means that it goes back to the original giver. Again, according to the long discussion in Tosfos, it may not be necessary to say that. You could say that Reb Shimon Gamliel that both the Tanakhama and Reb Shimon Gamliel would agree if he protested originally. But again, the whole point is that now he's protesting when he first receives the document, which was given through somebody else. So that's we have
like
to one second.
Okay,
so yeah, like you get. But wait, that's the point. In other words, the Gemara is going to work it out now. So now we discuss that when we bring that brisa, we discuss it. There's a sugya on this topic in Masechta Krusos of all places, because the Gemara deals over there with certain dinim in terms of karbonos that a person might bring on behalf of somebody else and things like that. So and cases where a person thought he was chayev in a certain korban and it turns out that he's not. So the Gemara ends up talking over there a whole sugya about these dinim momenos over here, about when a person gives a matana and the other one refuses it. Anyway, so Vahvinan Ba, so we have a discussion about that. The Tanakhama, Afilo Oymid Vetzigeach. Are you telling me the Tanakhama would say that he's koina the slave, even if he's standing there and protesting that he doesn't want? How can you give a person a matana against his will? Shoni matana siyachia, as the Rashbam had said before, yeah. So Omar Rava, the Itamer of Yechanan, so Rava, or some say Rav Yechanan, says, B'tzeveach me'ikroi, where he protests to begin with, when he first heard about it, Dekula amole pligi, like Connie, then you're right, everybody would agree, there's no argument that he's not koine. And if on the other hand he's first quiet and later on he protests, then then there's no question he was koine, because to begin with he accepted it and later on he says not, so it means that he would have to then give it away or be mafker it to somebody else if he doesn't want it in his possession anymore. Tosfos says that maybe once he protests, then maybe we would say that it becomes automatically hefker. But in any case, the point is,
but are we talking still on the
korbanos
or something else?
We're talking, no, now we're not talking about korbanos. Now we're talking more generally. We're talking more generally when a person gives a gift to somebody else, and it includes an eved, right? I'm just mentioning that in Krisos it mentions the reason it brings up this point in Krisos of all places, which is a masech that has to do mostly with the details of korbanos chatos, is because you have that point over there. Okay. Anyway. So continues the Gemara. When is the machlokas Reb Shimon Gamliel and the Chachamim shezikolay ayde acher, where he was mezake him the eved through somebody else, the shosak of a soif tzavach, and he was quiet, and later on he protested. So now the question becomes, because it was through somebody else, the Tanakama Sovim Deshoset Kaninu, the Tanakama says once he was quiet at the beginning, when it was through somebody else, and again, we're talking about he was present there at the time, so the Shrivmara, let's say, the Shrivmara gave the document to Reuven and said, I want you to give it to Shimon. Shimon was there. He didn't protest. So therefore, so the Tanakama says, well, he didn't say anything, so therefore, he was kind of them. Now, when he's protesting, Mehadahu to call debate means he's trying to change his mind, and it's too late to change his mind. Because he was already kind of that.
On the case, on the Gaten, the whole case is, if the owner sent a shliach, So shliach also can sign by the owner.
That's something else. That's something else. With a get, you have specific things involving shliach kabbalah and shliach halacha and all that. Fine. We're not getting into that. We're not getting into that level of detail. The point is that the point we're not talking about. Hold on. We're not talking about the shliach doing anything over here. We're talking about the recipient saying I don't want it. Now think of it. In the case of a get, for example, the case of a get is not really relevant to this. A wife has no ability to say I don't want this get. Until Cherem de Aben Gershim, she could be divorced against her will, so therefore
it's
not.
It's
not even. Before Cherem de Aben Gershim, she doesn't even have that ability to not accept it. But whatever, anyway. Anyway, going on. So the Tanakama will hold then that, by the time he's Tseveach, by the time he protests, already too late. Reb Shimon Gamliel says, no, the fact that you see that at the end he protested shows that to begin with, he just figured, look, as long as it hasn't actually reached me yet, why should I protest? It's a gnai for me. It would be a shameful thing for me to start protesting something that hasn't even happened yet. So he waits until he actually receives it, but he does actually mean to begin with that he doesn't want it. So behind like Savach and Hashta, the fact that he didn't protest until now, the Savach, because he figures Kilo Moti Liyadi Mai At Savach, he figures until it actually reaches my hand, until the Shtar or whatever it is reaches my hand, why should I protest? It seems silly to protest against something that may not even happen.
And when you say protest about what
he says I don't want it. He just says it. He says I don't want it.
We said the answer of that.
Yeah.
So
that would be why he doesn't want it. So the point is, Rav Nachman Yitzchok is saying, so again, so you have as follows. So if there was no third party involved, if it goes directly from the giver to the recipient, and again, the giver could be a Shchiv Mara, and potentially maybe according to some Rishonim, we could be talking about a body as well.
It could be also by Anim, like, you know, a poor man.
So if he protests right away, then we said Shmuel says, so then Rabbi Yochanan says he's not koine. If he is quiet and accepts it first, and then later on, and what happens because he's not koine, there you have the Rashbam versus Tosfos, whether it means that it becomes Hefker at that point, or as Tosfos says, it returns to the original giver. Or if he's quiet and accepts it, and later on he protests, then we have Shmuel saying he was already koneh anyway, and it's too late. If now he doesn't want it anymore, then according to the Rashbam, he would have to explicitly say, I'm giving it to somebody else, or I am making it hefker, and according to Tosfos, that may not be necessary. It'll become automatically hefker. Yeah. And then if it was done through a third party, then you have the Machlokes, Reb Shimon Gamliel and the Chachamim. The Rashbam points out that usually we have a rule in the Gemara that the halacha is like Reb Shimon Gamliel. However, the Rashbam says that that rule applies only when it's in Mishnayos. This is a Braisa we're talking about over here. So here the Rashbam says the halacha would actually be like the Chachamim. So according to the Rashbam, it would mean, in other words, that if it was Ali Yedei Acher, if it was through somebody else, in Shosak, then the result is, as the Chachamim say, it's too bad. He already was Koineh, and it's too late to change his mind. The Rashbam is a Rishon who's explaining the Gemara over here. He took over where Rashi passed away and didn't complete his period. Right. On the other hand, the Rambam paskins like Reb Shimon Gamliel and says, at least in the case of Truma, that Kvar Zochel Behen Yoshin, and therefore that he doesn't eat Truma. Fine. Another topic about matana. The Gemara says tana rabbanan. Shchiv menash amatnu masayim zuz l'ploni. If a shchiv menash, he's very ill. He figures he's going to pass away soon. And the Rashbam points out that the reason why we're mentioning specifically a shchiv merav here is because by a shchiv merav, we're going to be talking about over here a case where he says one after the other, give this amount to this person, this amount to this person, etc. So it's usual for a shchiv merav to do that, as opposed to a body usually gives them individually. So let's learn the case, and then we'll understand a little more why it's...
Well, you go way deeper, and just a small one, because you know the question here. Yeah. The Shimera, we're talking about, how about if somebody that went quickly, and he didn't know when he was going?
If he didn't know when he was going, well, then... If he went without a will, then you have the usual rules of Yerusha, then you have the usual rules of inheritance that are outlined earlier in the Perek. All of this we're dealing with is where a person knows he's about to die, and therefore he's trying to take steps to give out his property the way that he wants. Yeah. Okay. So Tana Rabbanan, Shchiv Menash Amatnu Masayim Zuz L'Ploini. A Shchiv Menash says, give 200 Zuz to Reuven, Ushloish Meis L'Ploini, and 300 to Shimon, Ba'arba Meis L'Ploini, and 400 to Levi. Ein Omen Kala Kodim B'Shtar Zacha. We don't say that the earlier the person is, the more of a right that he has to the money. Now, the Rashbam points out, first of all, if we're talking about a Shchiv Merav here, it has to be that there's nothing left, because with a Shchiv Merav, we say that only when if he's giving out all of his possessions because he expects to die shortly, then we say we don't need a kinyan or anything. But if he's giving out only some of it and reserving some of it for himself, obviously he's not doing it because he expects to die soon, because look, he knows he can't take anything of it with him after 120. So then you need a kinyan. So here we're talking...
On this case?
What?
Why you have to do kinyan?
If he hadn't given out everything, if we're talking about if he was given 200, 300, and 400. So in other words, if he has a total, his total assets are 900 zuz, and he's given 200, 300, and 400, which is his entire assets, no kinyan is necessary. But if no kinyan is necessary, but if there was something else left, if he had 950 or 1,000 or whatever, then we would need a kinyan for this to take effect. Here, when we're talking about there's no kinyan, therefore it has to be that we're talking about he's leaving nothing over. And therefore, the Rashbam points out that now the point of the issue is going to be, does any of them have precedence over the other? If it was a bari, we would say very simple. A bari, a healthy person, is usually going to say very clearly, as separate statements, I want 200 to go to Reuben. Later on, he'll say, I want 300 to go to Shimon, etc. And then there's no question who gets first, because obviously he first gave to Reuben. Forget about Reuben. Forget about Bechorim a minute. We're talking about he's giving to various people. But the point is, with a body, usually we could expect, we know very clearly, Reuben has first acquired his 200, later on Shimon acquired his 300, and so forth. The whole point of the discussion over here is going to be that we can't be sure which one gets first, and therefore therefore it becomes more necessary to say that we're talking about a Shchiv Merav. So Einam and Kol HaKodim B'Shtar Zocha, we don't say whoever gets earlier in the Shtar is the one who gets Zocha, is the one who gets earlier, but rather we say that all of them are considered to be on the same level. So what does that mean? So it means, therefore, that if there's a debt involved, then we're going to collect proportionally from each one. L'fichach, yotza olav shtar choyv. Therefore, if there comes out a shtar choyv that he owes somebody money, goyva mikulam, then that bal choyv will be able to collect from all of them. Each one proportionally. The Shivana gave out 200 to Reuven, 300 to Shimon, 400 to Levi.
Yeah.
Then at some point we find that there's a Shtar Chov where this Shivana had owed somebody money. So the Rashbam says, let's say, for example, he owes somebody 9 Zuz.
Okay.
Well, then the guy is going to collect 2 from Reuven, 3 from Shimon, and 4 from Levi. Now, the Rashbam also points out that, now, if it was a shtar choyv, and we're talking about money over here, then the Yisraelim don't have to pay with money or metalplin anyway. Only their land is meshubad. So the Rashbam says there's two possibilities. Either before they received the money, the shtar choyv came out, or we're talking about that when he says 200, 300, and 400, we don't mean money, but rather we mean land. And land of Yisraelim is under a shibud to a bal choyv. So in other words, the point is, he obviously meant to give all of them on an equal level, but the fact is, he's only a human being, he can only say one word at a time, so therefore, now the Rashbam also adds, it would have to be he wasn't quiet in between. If he had said, 200 to Reuben, and later on he rethought himself and said, you know what, and 300 to Shimon, and so forth, that would be different. Then we would say that is a case that the Gemara is going to talk about in the next perek, about what happens in that case. But in any case, the point is, here we say all of them are on an equal level. The Ramban makes an interesting point and says that and says this would only apply if they're getting different amounts, because then he has no choice but to mention Reuben, Shimon, and Levi separately. Let's say, for example, that he wanted to give each one of them 200, then he could just as well have said, I want Reuben, Shimon, and Levi to each get 200, and the fact that he didn't maybe shows that he wants Reuben to have precedence over Shimon, and Shimon to have precedence over Levi.
Levi, Shimon, Reuben, whatever the name would be, don't have enough to leave. And that's from the Chimera, whatever the will was.
Well, that's until now they didn't have, until now that, so, okay, so until now they didn't have what to live. Now they're receiving something. Some of it is going to have to go to the Baal Chayv. They're no worse off. They're no worse off. Yeah, they're no worse off than they were before. Yeah. So therefore, Aval Omer Tnuma Sayim Zuz Leploini. But if he says give 200 to Pliny, the Achrav Leploini, and after him give to Shimon, the Achrav Leploini, and after him give to Levi, Omim Kolakodim Meshtar Zoicha. Then we do say whoever is earlier in the Shtar does is Zoicha Lefichach Yotza Olaf Shtar Choyv. Therefore now, if a Shtar Choyv comes out and has to be paid off, Goyvim and Achron, then he starts by collecting from the last one, from Levi, because when he goes to Reuven and Shimon, they can say, as the famous expression goes, "Hinachti l'chol makom ligvus hemenu." You have Levi is the Levi was the last recipient. When we received our portions, Reuven and Shimon, there was still some that still belonged to the Shchivmera, and he gave it to Levi last. So therefore, so you should go and collect specifically from Levi. And then Ein Loy, and if there's not enough, Goyvim Mishalafonav, then he goes back to Shimon, Ein Loy, and if he doesn't have enough either, Goyvim Mishalafonav, then he goes back to Reuven, because there he clearly said Achrav, meaning that it's going to be in that order, first Reuven, then Shimon, then Levi, as opposed to the previous case, again, where he couldn't physically say all of them at the same time, and therefore we're saying that they're all considered on an equal level. So the Gemara continues. Turn it up on it. Shchiv Menasha Amat Tnuma Saim Zuz Leploini Bni Bechor. What about if the Shchiv Menasha says, "Give 200 zuz to Ploini, my son who is the Bechor, Karoi Loi, as is suitable for him." Now he doesn't need to say Karoi Loi. Just saying, "Give it to him. Yeah, give to him as a Bechor" is enough. Yeah. So when he says Karoi Loi, means he's adding something extra. It means he's doing a Yipui Koyach. He's improving his Koyach as far as what he's going to get. Namely, therefore, Noitlon, so therefore he gets the 200, Venotel es Bechorosei, in addition, he also gets his Chelek Bechora in the Nechosim. So the 200 is above and beyond his Chelek Bechora. On the other hand, if the father doesn't say karoi loy, if he says give him 200 zuz as his bechora, then it means then the bechor has the upper hand, meaning he has a choice in the matter. It's not that he's going to get both of them; it's one or the other. But he has the choice, which one, whichever one is going to be better for him. Rotza noitlon, if he wants to take the 200 zuz, and that will then good. Rotza noitel bechorosa, and if he wants to get a schelik bechora, then he'll get that. Depends which one is depends which one is more, basically. Yeah. Now the Rashbam points out the father can't reduce the amount for the bechorah lo yuchalavaker es ben ha'ahuva, as the pasuk says. So therefore, of necessity, the bechorah is getting at least as much as his bechorah. So therefore, when he says give him 200 zuz bivchorosei, then it can't mean. It can't mean that he's going to get less than his Bechorah. It means he's going to get at least as much as his Bechorah, and possibly more, depending whether the 200 is more or not. The point is that we're not going to say that if he said 200 and the Chelek Bechorah would be 300, that he's only going to get 200, because that would be violating the rule that the father can't take away the Bechorah. Now the Rashbam also adds that if he says, what about if he doesn't say b'chayrosa? What if he just says give 200 to my b'chur? The same rule would apply. Also yoda alo yoina. The point is only when he uses the extra expression karoi loy, then we're saying that it means both. But the point is, even though he said b'chayrosa, nevertheless, and you would think that means that maybe it means that he's limited only to that he's limited only that's capped at 200. No, we're saying the word bivcherose means that he gets his bichorda, but it doesn't really matter whether the father had said bivcherose or not. As long as he says give to Pliny 200, then it means that he's getting 200 or his bichorda, whichever is more.
He's bichorda, gets automatically.
Well, that's the point. In other words, that's the point here. Yeah. So the Gemara continues. What about then if the Shchiv Menashe says give 200 to Ploinis, my wife, as is suitable for her? So again, the word Karoi law is extra because as it is, she's supposed to be getting 200 for her ksuba. Let's say we're talking about her basic ksuba, where we know the basic ksuba of Psula is 200. So let's say that's all there was. There was no Tosfos ksuba. There was no Nichsin Malug. None of that. So yeah. So again, the same thing. The Talton, she gets the 200. Venetelis es ksubasa. In addition, she collects her ksuba because again, the word karoila means that point. The imama biksubasa, but if he says that I'm giving it to her as her ksuba, same thing. Yoda ala yona, she has the upper hand, rotsa ne talton. If she wants her rotsa, really, it's supposed to be in feminine form. If she wants, she collects the 200, if that's more. Rotsa netelis ksubasa, and if she wants, she collects her ksuba. Now the Rashbam does point out, you do have to assume that the case is where she wasn't moichel huksuba to him. Now it is possible for a wife to be moichel huksuba to her husband, and the Hagoyis Habach also adds, for example, we talked about a few days ago in the Gemara, you can have a case we learned last week where he made her a shutaf bein abonim, where he said that I'm giving you a portion equal to one of my children or parallel to one of my children, and we said or we said even if it was a smaller amount, whatever, then we can say she was merchel on the shibud of her ksuba, and therefore she wouldn't necessarily now be able to collect it. But here we're talking about where there was no mechila or anything like that. So she's entitled to collect her ksuba, but again it depends whether he said karoi law or not.
Exactly. Go ahead, Rob.
So then what happens? The Rashbam had learned actually in that sugya before about being moichel uksuba. The Rashbam had learned actually that it doesn't mean that she was moichel at all together. It just means she was moichel the shibud on all of the nechosim up until that point. If he gets any nechosim later on, she will be able to collect from them. Practically speaking, we're talking here about a shivana. He's not going to have a chance to get any more nechosim before he dies. So in practice, she's not going to end up being able to collect uksuba because the shibud that she had on the nechosim from before is gone. We learned there actually that the Rimi Gash had learned that it means that she has entirely forfeited her ksuba even from the chosin he gets later on, but again that's more relevant by a body, by a shchid mara. Here it's not necessarily as relevant. Be that as it may, yeah, the point is she may not be able to collect her ksuba, but here where he told her that she's entitled to 200, and biksubasa, or whether he said biksubasa or not, either way she's getting the 200 or the ksuba, whichever is more. Yeah.
One thing to add,
yeah.
Because you mentioned that if the wife was mochel on ksubasa, I would take the gift. But what if the opposite? I mean, the wife was not guilty. And
it's not a question of guilty. Not a question. Wait one second.
No,
who's talking about guilty?
We're talking about the money in ksuba.
No, we're not talking about guilty over here. We're talking about that she can be moichel on her ksuba. She can say to them, it means that she forgives her husband. She's saying, in other words, I'm foregoing my rights to the ksuba.
That means whatever. The husband is happy and he goes, well, without nothing, without giving anything on the ksuba. That's not of her. I'm just saying the opposite. Like, they didn't want, I mean, the Baal was guilty and not the wife.
Again, I don't know what I'm not sure what guilty you're talking about. But you know, hold on. Let's discuss this later. This is our Gemara is not.
Okay. Thank you.
The short answer is that if the husband doesn't want to pay his ksuba, then he has to pay it whether he likes it or not. But Similarly, a third case, Shchiv Menashe says, give 200 zuz to Pliny to whom I owe money, koroi loy, as is appropriate for him. Then he collects them plus his debt, because again, the koroi loy means that he's giving him something extra. But if he says give it to him as his debt, then he just gets the amount And he just then gets the amount for his debt. There are actually different girsos of Rishonim over here. The Rif has a girsa that b'chovo ein lo ela chovo. He just collects his debt. Meaning, unlike in the previous two cases where the b'chor or the wife has the right to collect the larger amount of the 200 or of the thing, here the Rif's girsa is that all he gets is his chov. The Rosh has a girsa yada al yona that would be similar to the other ones that he gets the large whichever amount that he wants. And the Ritva discusses it and says, you know, it's one thing by a Bechor and his wife. He loves them and he wants to give them. By any offer, you can't say that by a Baal Chov, plus the fact that you have concerns about Rivis. On the other hand, the Yad Ramah says that, maybe it's not such an issue. Maybe he may well mean that there are other debts that he owes that the guy has long since forgotten about or whatever. So therefore, maybe it's not such a problem for him to get. Now, so we've said three cases where we say because he says karoi loy, then we're adding something extra. First the question is. Well, so that's the question. Mishum de Amar Karoi Loi, Noitlan or Noitel Eschoivai. So you're telling me because he says Karoi Loi, then he collects that plus his debt, Viduma Karoi Loi, Bechoivai Karmar. How do we know? Maybe it means what he deserves as his debt. And really the same question would kind of be on the other ones as well, as far as the Ksuba and as far as the Bechor. In fact, the Rabbeinu Gershom points out that, yeah, the Gemara could have asked it on the previous ones, but we finished with the case of the Baal Chov, so therefore we asked specifically on that. And there are Rishonim who say that, no, again, given that when it comes to a Bechor or his wife, he feels more close to them, so therefore we can assume that Karoi Loi means to add something extra of a Baal Chov, where he doesn't have such warm feelings to him, the Rimigash, and the Yad Ramah points out, therefore the Gemara is bothered by why should we say that just by saying Karoi Loi means he's giving him something extra. So the answer is, Omer Rav Nachman, Omer Li Huna, Rav Nachman says that Huna, which is to say Rav Huna, they were colleagues, so he just calls him by his first name, says, Hamani Rav Akiva, this Braisa that we just quoted is specifically appointed Rav Akiva, the Dayik Lishni Yisera. Where Reb Akiva is medayik, he says when a person uses extra words, then it means that he's giving something extra, namely, and therefore in this case, the fact that he's using the extra words karoi loy means that he's adding something extra. The Tanan, namely, we learned earlier in our Masechta that when a person sells, for example, a house, the loyas a dus, with the house, he's not automatically selling a bur or dus that are inside the house. As we learned then, a bur is an underground. Either a bur is underground or a dus is above ground, or actually that Ashbam had learned over there that both the bur and the dus are underground, but the bur is not lined with bricks or stones and the dus is. Whatever the case, they're considered to be something important independent of the house. So when he sells the house and doesn't specify that he's including those, then they're not included. And the Mishnah had continued, the Apapisha Kosovoi Umkabaruma, even if the seller writes in the shtar that I'm selling you the depths and the heights of the house, it still doesn't include that. What it means is that the guy has ground rights and air rights of the house. It means he has the right, for example, if he digs underground the house and finds a buried treasure over there, like in all the stories, he'll be able to keep it. Without writing Umka, he wouldn't. With Ruma, it means, for example, that he can build more stories on top of the house. Or it would mean if somebody wants to fly a plane over there, then he can charge the guy a fee for that. But without rumor, he wouldn't be able to do that. But the point is, in other words, one second. But it still doesn't mean that he acquires a bur or dus, which are considered an independent thing within the house. And the Mishnah continues, but Sarach Likach Lederach Tivir Rav Akiva. Rav Akiva says in that case that the seller of the house would have to buy from the buyer a right of way to be able to go to the borer of the dus, given that he still retains ownership of the borer of the dus. If he wants it, if he wants to be able to get to it, and he doesn't want to be, for example, like that woman with a bibi ba baya with the tree that we learned about yesterday in the Gemara, then he's going to have to buy himself a pathway to there. The Chum say he doesn't need to because we discussed over there Moicher Ba'in Yofa, Moicher Ba'in Ra, Moicher, is he selling more generously or more stingily? Anyway, Umoide Rav Akiva, but Rav Akiva agrees, Bizman Sha'amalech Chutzme Elu, if he explicitly says, I'm selling you the house but not the bur or not the dus, that he does not have to buy a path there, because by mentioning, he wouldn't have had to say it, even without mentioning it, the bur or the dus are not included. Alma, therefore we see Rabbi Akiva holds, kiven deloit sorich, since he doesn't need to say that extra word, the ka'omar, and he says, chutz me'elu, l'tefuya milsa ka'osi, then it means that he's coming to add something extra. Tochinami, the same thing over here. Kivin deloit sorich, he didn't need to say the words karoi loy. And if he said, give 200 to my balchoiv, the same thing would work. The ka'omar, and he says that, l'tafuya milsa ka'osi, therefore we can say he comes to add something extra, and therefore that in fact balchoiv is going to get the 200 plus his choiv. The Rashbam points out, by the way, one second, the Rashbam points out that really when we say over here that this is according to Rabbi Akiva, it's very possible that actually the Chachamim would agree in this case. We find clearly Rabbi Akiva is darshaning from the extra Loshen. The Chachamim are saying either way he's getting a path there, because Moicher b'ayin ra Moicher, and he intends to hold back for himself, and he intends to reserve for himself the path. So as far as they're concerned, it doesn't matter whether he said Chutz Me'elu or not, either way it's going to have the same dig. Rabbi Akiva is the one making that distinction. So we see Rabbi Akiva clearly holds that the extra wording is meant to add something extra that he wouldn't otherwise have had. But the Chachamim may well agree with that underlying concept, which would mean in our Gemara over here that if he says Karoi Loi, even the Chachamim would agree that the other guy gets the 200 plus whatever it is that he's supposed to get.
By the pathway also?
No, not by the pathway. By the pathway, the Chachamim is saying anyway, Mercha Bayin Ra Mercher, and he anyway. If he said, according to the Chachamim, he wouldn't need to say Chutz Me'elu in order for himself to reserve himself the path. Either way, he has himself the path. He does have, according to them, by saying Chutz Me'elu, it's not adding anything extra that he wouldn't have otherwise had. Yeah. What?
I'm sorry. I love you.
It's fine.
Whatever I have to say is, when I have a house, and this is my house, mm-hmm. I'm not trying to sell cheap, I'm not trying to sell this, I'm in the middle. Why I cannot sell my boat?
If you want to include your boat, if you want to sell your boat, there's nothing preventing you. You're right in the shire. They're saying I'm selling you my house along with the boat. Okay. But we're saying if he says by default, if he just says I'm selling you my house and he doesn't specify, then we're saying the boat is not.
If
he didn't specify. Okay. Yeah. The Gemara says, "Tana Rabbanan, Shchiv Merah she'om a mona yeshli eitzel ploini. If a Shchiv Merah says that I owe a mona to that ploini owes me a mona, ha'edim koisvin, then edim who hear the Shchiv Merah saying that can write the document and say that they're writing a memorandum. They're writing like a record of the fact that the Shchiv Merah said this. Afterwards, we're gonna have to take it to Beis Din, of course." And they can do that even if they don't know, even if they don't recognize who that person is, who that pointy is, or they don't know whether in fact he actually owes the money, because they're not writing that we know that he owes him money. All they're writing is, we're recording that this Shchiv Merah said such and such. We want to have an official record of it. So they can write even if they don't know him, L'fichach k'shu goyva. Therefore, when the Shchiv Merah or his Yoshim are going to want to collect on that, then they're going to have to bring a proof. They're going to have to bring a proof that in fact what a Shchiv Merah says is valid as far as what he's giving out his own nechosim. Obviously, we don't take as a given everything that a Shchiv Merah says. So they're going to have to bring a raya. They're going to have to bring edim or whatever that he actually. Yeah, because again, the edim are not saying that we're testifying that he actually owes him the money. All the edim are doing are saying we're testifying that Pliny said such and such. Dibre Rav Meir. That's what Rav Meir says. V'chum say to begin with, they can't even write that memorandum unless they know the facts. Because we're concerned about a Beis Din Toyim. We're concerned that a Beis Din may get a hold of this document and they may misunderstand. They may think, well, wait, we have a record over here that says that where Reuven and Shimon are signing that we heard that Pliny owes Pliny money, and they're going to realize, they're going to think that it means that he actually owes it to him. So we have the concept, in fact, that when Edim sign a shtar nasa k'mishin nechru edusim bebeisdin, we consider as though their testimony has already been validated and based in. So the Chum say they have to know the facts first, and only then can they write the shtar. L'frichach, therefore, k'shur goyva in sarach l'aviraya. Later on, when the Shchiv Merah or his heirs are going to collect, they don't have to bring a raya because we already have a valid document signed by Edim. So then it'll be the other way around. If the guy is going to claim that it was forged or whatever, it's up to him to start bringing, or he can claim that it was forged or whatever, he's going to have to bring raya for that, but yeah. Okay. So the Gemara says,
this stack in Heskel for Bezna.
No, that's what it is. Well, I mean, so practically speaking, it's going to have to go to Beis Din, because otherwise, how are you going to force him to comply with it? But
when you make it up, you don't have to. That's the problem.
Right. So the Gemara says, Omer Rav Nachman. So again, Rav Nachman says, Omer Lihuna. Rav Huna told me. Maybe that's why the Gemara is bringing this in over here, because it's another example where Rav Nachman points out a detail that Rav Huna explained to him. Tana, we learn in a Braisa, Rav Meir Omer Ein Kosvin, that there's a braisa that says the other way around. Rav Meir says they can't write unless they know the facts. The Chum say they could write it. But after Rav Meir loy Omar, because even Rav Meir is not saying really that you can't write it. Elamishum based in Toyin. But again, because of this concern of based in Toyin. Really, Rav Meir should have agreed with the Chachamim in the second braisa and said, look, the Shchiv Mera himself doesn't have the opportunity. It's too late for him to go and start demanding from the loyva. He's about to die. But Rav Meir is concerned about a based in Toyin. Him that a Beis Din may misunderstand that the shtar, which is meant to be only a record of what the Shchiv Mera says, that they're going to think it's an actual shtar chayv saying that he owes him money.
They might
think that they see two aid him or sign on it.
The family.
We're saying that the family may misunderstand and a Beis Din may misunderstand.
Good.
So the Gemara says Omer Rav Dimi Minahavda in Hilchsa in Choshem a Beis Din Toyin. But Rav Dimi Minahavda says no, we're actually not concerned the halacha about a Beis Din Toyin, and therefore the halacha would be that they would be able to write down this fact that he said it, and we don't have to be concerned. So in other words, we would accept Rav Nachman's version of what the Chachamim say, the Chachamim Kosvin, because again, Rav Meir is only disagreeing because of the concern of Beis Din Toyin. Rav Dimi Minahavda is saying we're not worried about Beis Din Toyin, so therefore that's it. We can write, and then they're going to write down that the Duchron, they're going to say a memorandum that Pliny, the Shchiv Mera, told us that Pliny owes him a money, and then afterwards, so then we'll bring that to Beis Din, and Beis Din will say, okay, now you Yoshim have to bring a proof that in fact he does actually owe him. You have this statement that your father made. Now go look for Adim or Star or whatever, and then get to the bottom of it.
In this case, where he's saying
that Pliny owes me a money.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, the question is, well, you're saying that the Edom can write it even without knowing whether the facts are true, because they're just writing down what he said. But why is it different from a case that Rava said, the Omer Rava, in Chiltzin Elayim Kain Makirin? Rava says, when it comes to Chalitza, the Beis Din can oversee a Chalitza only if we know who they are, only if we know that they are a Yavam and Yavama. Because again, we're concerned about Beis Din Toyin. We're concerned about that a Beis Din might mistakenly, so what's going to happen? In other words, the first Beis Din is going to write out afterwards, after a Chalitza, typically Beis Din writes out a document saying that this woman has received Chalitza and is now free to remarry. So if they write out such a document, then again, you may have a Beis Din Toyin is going to see, well, wait, you know, we have, they're going to think, well, the first Beis Din wouldn't have done it unless they knew that this was a Yavam and Yavama. So then in that case, we can take it to the bank, and then that we're going to give her permission to remarry, and they don't realize that, so the Beis Din themselves has to be able to recognize it. The Ein Mamayin and Ein Elim Kein Makirin. Similarly, when it comes to Miyun, can be done only if the Beis Din recognizes the parties. Miyun is where a girl was married off by her mother or brothers or whatever when she was a Ketana, and now she has the ability, as long as she's a Ketana, to say, Eini Roitza, I don't want to be married to this guy anymore, and the marriage is dissolved, and it's as if it never took place.
The age of Ketana
for this purpose is anything under Bas Mitzvah, or technically until she gets face status.
She doesn't go with her husband at that point. She goes to her husband when she's 17.
No.
Correct?
No.
You can marry someone at 12 or 13.
She can be married in principle even as a baby. What's going to happen as far as...
Yeah.
Yes, so then they're fine. The halacha, the father has the right to be makadisher, even okay. and that is valid daraisa. If her father is dead, then her mother or her brothers can do it, but then she has this out with me.
Right.
Technically, when she's below a certain age, she doesn't even need me, and she just goes home, and that's that. She has to be like above six, between 6 and 10 years old to even require me. And then she has that window of opportunity until she's bat mitzvah, strictly speaking, until she develops shesiris. Anyway, whatever.
Definitely.
The point is that in that case also, you in that case, generally it's 12, but then,
yeah.
Yeah, generally it's 12, but in any case, the point is that Beis Din has to be able to recognize her. Now, there's an interesting discussion among Rishonim. Is it necessary for them to recognize both of them? The Rashba makes the point. They need to recognize her, because otherwise you don't want some random girl is going to come in and do Miyun, and it's not her marriage, Bechlal, and she's messing up somebody else's marriage. But on the face of it, the Rashba says, if we know who she is, then we can trust that she's talking about her actual husband, and therefore that should be that. We don't need to know that the person she's speaking of is, in fact, her husband. On the other hand, the Magid Mishnah says not necessarily, because you still might have, there might be, for example, somebody else in town who has the same name as her husband, and then it's going to cause problems. Anyway, the point is, so therefore, so Rava says in those cases, we do have to know them before we can do anything. The result is that after the chalitza or after the miyun, when it comes to writing down a document afterwards saying that this chalitza or this miyun took place, then we can write it, even if the Edim don't know who these people are, because they can trust that Beis Din knew who they were. So the question is, my timer. Now, why would Rava be saying that they have to recognize them? On the face of it, because we're concerned about a future Beis Din making a mistake. Meaning, in other words, again, if you don't require the first Beis Din to recognize them when it comes to the chalitza or the miyun, what's going to happen is the first Beis Din is going to have the chalitza done. They're going to write, the Edim are going to write out a document saying that it was done. That document is going to wind up in the hands of another Beis Din who doesn't know that the first one didn't investigate who these people are, because they didn't know that halacha, and now they're going to allow her to remarry, and that's a problem. So we see we are concerned for Beis Din Toyin. The words my time alav, by the way, are in parenthesis. The Rashbam has them, meaning, in other words, that the Gemara is, Rava has made his statement, and now the Gemara is asking that on the face of it, it's because Chayshin and the Beis Din Toyin. On the other hand, Tosfos does not have those words, meaning that Rava understands the words Mishum de Chayshin and the Beis Din Toyin are all part of Rava's own statement. In any case, the point is that Rava himself, so we're saying, that Rava is saying we're concerned about a Beis Din Toyin, Dimi Minahavda was saying that not, and that the halacha is not. Now, of course, the Gemara could easily answer, look, Rav Dimi and Rava are both Amoraim, they can argue with each other. But since the Gemara often uses this, that since Rava was an exceptionally great Amora, so we assume the halacha is going to be like him, and we don't want to have, and here Rav Dimi Minahavda is saying flatly, the halacha is, we're not concerned about a Beis Din Toyin, so we seem to have a contradiction over here. So the Gemara answers, Loi. The difference is that it's not a contradiction. Based in Bosa Based Dina Loi Daiki. One Based in is not necessarily going to be Medayak after another one. When you have, in the case of Chalitza or Miyun, when the document states that this thing was done in front of the Based in, the Chalitza or the Miyun, if a different Based in gets a hold of that document, they're going to think the first Based in must have investigated the matter thoroughly, and therefore we can rely on them, and they're not going to realize, yeah, but the first Based in may not have known who these people are, and therefore we have a document that says that Ploni and Plonius did Chalitza, and it's no good, because they're not actually who they claim they were. Therefore, the first Beis Din has to make sure that they investigate the matter and know who these people are, and then that way there's no concern that a later Beis Din will fail to check up on it. Beis Din also Edim Daiki, but a Beis Din will check up when you have something that was only written by Edim. Here we're talking about the Shivan I said in the presence of Edim that Ploni owes me a mana. So a Beis Din, when they see that, they're not going to think to themselves, well, the Edim must have known all the facts. It's only Edim. It's not a Beis Din. So therefore, they're going to realize, you know what, we better check up on the facts, and therefore it's fine. We can write the document, even if the Edim don't know who that Pliny is, or that, in fact, he owes the money, because by the time the document reaches Beis Din, they will check out the facts, and they will make sure that it is in fact a valid claim before they allow the Yoshim to collect it from that guy. So that's the difference. Okay.